Blog Talk Radio. Hey, good evening, and welcome to Bridging the Gap of Georgia Radio. Happy hour. We've got Amari and Daniel. JAQ 96.5 FM in Seattle for upstreaming our show tonight. You know, you guys are really appreciated, and I hope that we give you guys, listeners, perspective of everything, each and everything that we do. But yeah, Amari, how are you doing?
Doing great. Fresh off of watching the Major League Baseball All-Star Game last night, which is odd that, you know, the first thing that we do is we start the show off thanking our listeners in Seattle, seeing as one of their Mariners won for the American League last night, on top of the 10th inning. I think it's kind of great. Favorite sport, my favorite time of year, my favorite thing to do on Wednesdays, still my favorite people, with the exception of you, of course, Keith. Yeah, no, you're not so bad. But, yeah, man, I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, a couple of things that we'll cover tonight on the show, I've seen in the news that got under my skin a little bit. But, you know, of course, we'll address them, and I'll address them in my own unique way, and we'll go back and forth and have a conversation about it. What's been going on with you?
Well, I wanted to have a moment of silence to remember those 16 Marines that got killed in the C-130 crash loaded with ammunition down in Mississippi. So have a moment of silence to remember those guys, because, you know, we're going to remember them now and then everybody. All right. Want to really and truly, you know, one of our things should be is never ever forget about the people that actually defend our freedoms.
Well, the things that we have to keep a conscious mind of, Keith, is that all these things occur in a combat zone. You know, we lose soldiers, we lose airmen, we lose seamen in training incidents. It doesn't just take going off and to be on a foreign land fighting for our country for us to suffer a loss.
That's true, because people get killed training, you know, in the military, you know, so it's not just going into combat. So anyway, Daniel is part of Bridging the Gap of Georgia now. He came, wanted to do some work, and he's 11 Bravo, so he's got the core just like we do. And, you know, Daniel, tell everybody hello.
I appreciate you having me on, Keith.
All right, that's good.
You told me your show started at 7. I figured, gosh, I thought you'd been in bed by now. No, I appreciate you having me on, buddy.
But, you know, it's really hard to, and Amari can attest to this, to run an organization and hold true to the values and the moral compass, so to speak, and be true to your word, because as y'all, you don't believe what everybody's not alike, in other words. And it makes it hard, you know, because we're not in it for the money. And, you know, later on in the show, we'll give an update on Terry, the guy that called in that was homeless. We'll give an update on that later on in the show. It's so great to be here, though. But I guess I'll give an update on the house right now. We've got a meeting with Gainesville Mechanical tomorrow to look at the AC, the heating and air thing, and I have technicians over at the house today, but they're coming back tomorrow. And I really want to thank Mike over at Gainesville Mechanical. He's in charge of it, and he's also a veteran. And I really want to thank him because, you know, I think that they're going to help us a lot. He was saying today that the biggest expense to doing a job is the permitting and inspection, and the city of Oakwood has waived those fees for us to get this project going, which makes a difference, I guess. You there, Amari?
Yeah, I'm here. I believe it will.
So we're meeting with Mike to talk about it and see how they're going to help us. But one of the things is that the unit, the AC unit and the heat pump, the technician had it, jumped it today and had it working. So it actually worked. So that's going to be good and everything. And if we can just keep them, Mike, Gainesville Mechanical, you know, keep that relationship going so that when something happens, because equipment don't run forever, you know, and that's one of my problems. I was telling Daniel that that's one of my problems, that I'll create the relationship, nurture it like you have to, because I'm doing so much running and doing so much, and that's why I'm glad Daniel come on and wanted to help, because he'll be an asset to that point as far as keeping me focused on nurturing relationships and such.
Help you in any way I can. I'm just and you know, the whole goal is to, you know, hopefully save some lives and put these vets in position to succeed, and hopefully I can assist that in any way.
Daniel, I was thinking that if you're up to it, if you could tell the story of your friend, but I don't want tonight's show to be a bashing the VA type show, because everybody knows that they're useless to stuff like this. Has to be talked about. Amari, you're absolutely correct. We have to have open and honest dialogue with American people if we want to get things done.
I think the critical part about that, go ahead, Danny.
Well, I lost it, so go ahead.
I think that one of the most critical parts about having that open dialogue and those conversations, Keith, is stepping aside or putting aside our differences or perceived differences politically. I mean, if I'm going to sit down and I'm going to have a conversation with you about how I feel, you know, where it pertains to the VA, our country as a whole, as society, I mean, I can't look at you as, you know, a conservative Keith or a liberal Keith or a Republican Keith or a Democratic Keith or you voted for X person Keith, right? I got to look at you as neighbor, friend, fellow countryman Keith, who may have differences and different philosophies and a different lifestyle than I do. We might even be on two different economical scales, right? We may have been raised in two different types of households. You know, one of us may have grown up in a full household. One of us may have grown up in a broken household. We both may have grown up in a broken household, whatever the case may be, right? But at the end of the day, I think what we lose sight of is we're all Americans, each and every one of us. And until we can start to have the type of conversation where each and every one of us can benefit on some level, you know, it doesn't mean that it has to happen overnight. Certainly doesn't mean that we ever have to always agree. But I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know about you and how you feel. I mean, I kind of do, because I know we've had these conversations. But where can we get anywhere if the first thing when I don't agree with you is a hurl of insult or something I heard from someone else that I can't, you know, that is a fact only because it's been handed off to me? Where are we getting? How are we getting any closer to a solution? And then even if we do agree, how do we get closer to a solution if we then turn around? It's like a shifting of the blame. Problems need solutions, and we need more conversation and more energy and effort, I feel, dedicated and directed towards that. Or the very fabric of what we are, slowly, you know, thread by thread, begins to fray.
Well, I think that sometimes it is healthy to disagree on something, because whenever you disagree on something, you know, you can talk about it and come to some solution, you know, and we don't have to agree on everything, because I don't agree with over 90% of your crap.
I mean, but I'm just saying, the only reason you're saying that, Keith, is because you're a conservative, and that's just the way you all think.
And see, usually I would take that as an insult and get all, you know, that's where we come as a society. Because
yes,
as long as you know that I'm a conservative and that's the way I think, then we can move forward with solutions, you know. So it's not a bad thing to, I don't know, it's just hard to explain, I guess, that.
You know what it is? It's the fact that I can look at you as a conservative and say, okay, what can I glean from you? What ideals and philosophies can we have from your difference and my difference on this one issue, where there is an actual common ground and there is an agreement, and where we recognize that, wait a minute, if you're not satisfied with this issue and I'm not satisfied with this issue and we're on two different sides of the issue, well, then the issue, as it is described, is the issue. So as long as I'm on my side of the yard and you're on your side of the yard and we're yelling over the fence about the same thing with the same problem, then shouldn't the conversation be on, well, if we have both identified that problem, how do we go about correcting it? How would you,
right.
Or the question becomes, how would I ask you, okay, well, from your point of view, how would you solve it?
Mm-hmm.
Then we continue to disagree and agree until we meet about that point, and then that's how decisions get made.
Unfortunately,
but if I'm the blame and you're the blame, go ahead, Daniel.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, unfortunately, nowadays, people get all their information from Hollywood, and they, instead of doing research on their own and actually listening to the right source, you know, they listen to, Nicki Minaj.
They get it from their executive producer or that artist that is hot right now, or that actress.
Exactly.
Or actor. Absolutely. Is quote-unquote bold enough to strike out. But most
exactly.
People don't recognize their opinions are formulated from that of an executive producer who is responding to what they are told based on what the advertisers want. And at the end of the day, it's to stoke the pot, because that generates more eyes, and more eyes generates more ads, and more ads generates more revenue for someone else's pocket. The very same people that we are on two different sides of the line across this country yelling about or stoking the very same fire. It's like the sports argument. You know, my favorite team versus your favorite team.
Yeah,
only
really
one
is.
Team can win the championship. But at the end of the day, if my favorite team doesn't make it to the World Series or the Super Bowl or the NCAA championship final, or isn't in the final round of, you know, a golf tournament on a Sunday, isn't playing for that green jacket, why are still millions of people tuning in? So it's like, you know, you're kind of new to
getting up, and I don't.
I think
Amari,
people get along just great. Yeah, what's up?
Well, you're breaking up, and I don't know whether it's on your end or our end. It's very hard because we're getting about every third word or something, and you know this is what makes me want to go join ISIS.
this is exactly why I wanted to join ISIS, because I can't get my thoughts out without them being distorted.
Right. And it's very frustrating and such, especially on my end. And the problem is I don't know what to do, because I've done everything that I know to do, because, you know, I've put new equipment in the CO and I don't know.
I say we fight through it.
Well, I'm all for it, but I just want you to understand that we're only hearing about every third word.
I'm getting the gist of what you're saying. It's just it sucks whenever it's jumping.
And my niece could grow up tonight.
Hold on.
How old?
9.
She's 9 years old, so she's so she can listen to the show. So you guys welcome Morgan to the show.
Hi, Morgan.
You know, and it always happens whenever we get into a serious discussion. I wonder if ISIS is looking for some good men.
You know, I'm honestly, cue my conspiracy theorist, but it's either ISIS, because we spit the real truth, or it's someone within the Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm confident, so confident that from now on, everywhere I go, I won't go anywhere without my blue cord and my freshly minted aluminum foil shoes, just in case.
Well, those aluminum foil shoes makes a difference in everything, you know.
It does. It improves my reception. I feel a little faster with them on. I'm a little smarter.
Signal.
I just did. I just slipped into them. So hopefully we should be able to be on track now.
Well, I believe it is getting a little bit better, Omar.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, I hope we're clear now. I hope we have a better reception.
It's a lot better.
Okay.
And you know, that's what's frustrating to me. In the middle of the fire, so to speak, battle, you know, you run out of ammo. But anyway, let's drive on and get back to the having decent conversations with people that Jethro. Do you want less? His buddy and why he really wanted to get involved in an organization that makes a difference.
Yeah.
Why don't you do that?
All right.
Was that direct to me?
Yeah, he was asking you there. My good friend that became a brother, we served in Alaska, 172nd. Which I actually believe has been is no more. It was a striker brigade. We were paired up together. They were roommates. Long story short, you know, we served together and became very close. And we both were injured with many things, and took a toll on him in particular, and body and mind. He moved actually to be closer to me and a family member of his. It was great to be around him, but you could see kind of the downward spiral beginning body-wise, and you could see him, he started sleeping all day, and and it was just it was a mess. It was trying to get him out of the house, and we were very close, and he had a bad night, very bad evening, and packed up his stuff at where he was staying and decided to take off and went down just a mile down the road from where I live to a VA clinic and pulled in the parking lot there and sat there all night and waited till the came there in the parking lot. It was the day before my 30th birthday. It was the day after his brother's birthday. I don't care about my birthday. It was quite a combo. Fortunately, sadly, he had a bad night and decided to end it. And, I've wanted to do stuff for years, beyond just losing him, but it's a serious, serious problem that the VA doesn't acknowledge. And actually the VA that he died at in the parking lot didn't even acknowledge what happened. They initially said it was an accidental overdose. I actually found that out by nurses and doctors that worked there as I went and talked to them. And they were told to basically lie about what happened and, completely dismiss it. There was no news stories. So Keith brought up average 22 vets a day, commit suicide. Well, that's, makes you wonder what the real number is, because whenever you're not, when it's not guys that, a soldier died, a veteran died, how do you know what the actual number could be? It's kind of scary. But yeah, so his name is James Robert Medich, specialist James Robert Medich. Have a tattoo for him. I waited a year to the day to do that for him. I wanted to do something special, and I got, he was very close and was basically my only family, near me at all. And, if I'm able to jump in here with Keith and whoever else, Amari, exactly. And be part of, be able to save a life. That's, I say it's worth it. And, if anybody happens to be listening, or if, there's people out there that actually care.
Well, we are out here and we really care, but a lot of times I think that the problem is the cause of 99.9% is the problem because of their denials. Constant denials and the way they mess with us like it's not doing us a favor whenever they shouldn't be doing us a favor. It should be their obligation and their job to take care of us, because that's what I was promised when I joined. And if I got hurt or injured as a soldier on active duty, that I'd never have to worry about health care again. So, when I say this, I think the problem is the VA. I just think that their response
is a like Trump thing, but I was going to say that if Donald Trump can somehow revamp the whole VA win in my book. It's from top down. It's corrupt in so many different ways. We could spend weeks talking about it. So if he's able to do something, he talks about one, open that, we actually see a huge and a change. That it's terrible in so many ways.
Come out with a new statistic that said it's 20 a day now. Come on, are you serious?
Oh,
like you?
Oh, we've gone down by a whole two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where it should be zero. It's weird, and I'll give you an example of this. I don't know if our listeners, if it reached out in Seattle or not, but Friday we had a veteran go into Wells Fargo here in Cobb County, and you know, it's so funny, but the ironic thing was that he went in and said that the VA has screwed him and he wants some answers. And the people there doing banking, he let them go. You know, so if he was there to kill or rob the bank, why can't he go? You know, it's so weird. And, you know, all $100 of his pay. And that's why I say that the VA is responsible and they have blood on their hands, because, you know, they didn't have to take $900 away from him right now, you know, because they stretch it out. You know, they could take $900 come out of a veteran's paycheck or a veteran's disability check in a month. That hurts terribly, you know, and go ahead, Mark.
They can't stretch it out. They can't stretch it out because they don't know if that veteran's going to be one of the 20, now 20 a day. So they need that money back right then. You know, money's tied around the VA.
Well, of course it is, whenever they spend $40 million on artwork that we can't even see and enjoy.
These water fountains aren't just going to fill themselves, man. Okay? You understand that.
Right. And see, I'm reading an article here where only 21 states are reporting the veteran suicide rate.
Wow.
So how can
the number
be? How can that be an accurate number? It can't, because everybody's not playing the same game.
Total number of veterans that attempt suicide per hour. 24-hour period.
I wonder if that can be figured out, Amari, because, you know, as well as
veterans
that,
showing up at hospitals, in emergency rooms, overdosed on pills, just in a car accident after being heavily intoxicated, have attempted to hang themselves or shoot themselves, or put themselves in a position where they get into a fight and the thing that they're hoping for is that someone kills them. What's the total number? Was there a total number of veterans who confront police officers on a daily basis to attempt suicide by cops? How many are out breaking into houses and robbing stores and trying to find ways to survive? Like, tell me that, Department of Veterans Affairs. And to be honest with you, this isn't a bash in the Department of Veterans Affairs, but they have those numbers as well.
Do you think
every time a veteran gets arrested and they're in a city jail or a county jail and they ask for your name and they run your fingerprint, they ask for your background. You know,
right.
Which one was when they're asking the mental profile? Have you ever served in the United States military? Yes. That information gets forwarded up the chain. Does that information get acknowledged? No, because if that information gets acknowledged, it becomes a matter of public record. And then you know as well as I do, as well as our listeners, if that becomes a matter of public record, someone's going to be asking, okay, so what kind of treatment program was in place for this soldier while he was in this hospital, while he was in this mental hospital after his or her suicide attempt failed? What kind of recovery program and assistance program was made available to this veteran while they were in the custody of law enforcement or on the way out? Or what kind of medical attention did they receive mentally if it's a clear and apparent that there's been a mental breakdown somewhere along the way? And how many veterans, and this number may be impossible to know, it may or may not be, but how many veterans every day are just on a threat where that bad day, that bad night becomes a bad series of days or a bad week or a bad month or just, you know what, this is a bad hour and I'm just not going to deal with this anymore. I can't deal with this anymore. I have nowhere to turn. I don't know who to turn to. What am I going to call this line for? For what? How's someone going to help me right now? I need to eat. I need some place to stay. I'm angry. I don't even know why I'm angry. I'm nervous.
There,
I'm scared. I don't even know why I'm scared. I should take these pills? Oh, these pills are magic? So I get these pills without counseling? Oh, okay. You know, and I bring that up because, you know, Keith, my counselor, which I didn't know, was reassigned by the VA, which no one informed me. And I go to an appointment, and I have a one-hour teleappointment, sit in the room, which is, I'm going to describe it to you, and it's probably one of the most ridiculous, isolating, worst concepts the VA could ever come up with for combat veterans. You sit in a room facing a computer screen, talking to someone who's probably 1,000 miles away that you've never met before in your life, explaining the details of why you were already supposed to be going to counseling all over again, basically starting from ground zero. And the only thing that you get when you walk out of that room is a prescription.
Mm.
You've been in that room for an hour. Now you tell me where that provides you with any sort of assistance or reassurance. Comfort.
That's ridiculous.
You've just been meeting with someone regularly. And now you have a whole new doctor and you have to start all over again. And then come to find out, a week after you meet with that person, you get a phone call from the VA that tells you you've now been assigned another doctor. Because that one was just one to gauge where you are to figure out, you know, who you needed to see next. Well, okay, well, now I'm up to my third person with a fresh new prescription, three prescriptions. So in the meantime, and then luckily for me, I mean, and this is me and a few other veterans that have gone to this particular VA that I've asked. You've got this fresh new prescription that's going to last you 90 days because they give you a 90-day with a refill. And the purpose for that is because your next appointment isn't until September.
Mm-hmm.
But you just want counseling, man. You're like, you're pretty good with the counseling. I don't need the pills. So my next counseling appointment, my next one-hour session with the VA is not until September. But I got these pills lasting between now and then. Oh, okay. That's cool.
Tell you what they don't tell you is that
tell you
the
I want to quit drinking. I tell you I want to quit drinking, not because I feel like I have a problem, but because I'm, you know, I just like, yeah, I don't feel like drinking beer anymore. I know we have a substance abuse, you know, classes. I like to enroll in those. Find different ways, you know. Not that I feel like I have a problem, but I'm going to cut back on drinking beer. So you tell me we have a program that's available, but you tell me I can't possibly get into that program until October. Oh, okay. So in the meantime, I'm just supposed to, and I kid you not, quote unquote, these are my words, just try to limit or put a limit on how much beer or alcohol you intake. Oh, that's what I drove all the way an hour and a half for you to tell me that? Well, gee golly. Thank you, Captain Hindsight. And it's like stories like that where I don't know if it's being recognized on a larger scale, but you just now have veterans from 2003, 2004, 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 from Iraq and Afghanistan that are just now breaking the shell to come out
mm-hmm.
to seek the help that for years they've been holding inside, that they've been self-medicating or parts of their lives have been falling apart around them where they're just now opening up to go out and seek the assistance from the Department of Veterans Affairs because they recognize if they want to get to another point in their life or any sense of balance of close to, you know, who they feel, not that they were, but who they should be on the inside, but they can't figure out how to get that inside to manifest on the outside on the daily. Those veterans are just now starting to come out of the woodworks, turning 25, 30 years old, 35 years old, where they're looking at their lives. And in many cases, these veterans have lost family members because family members, they've lost marriages. They've lost relationships with their children. They've lost relationships with friends. They feel so alone, and they're looking at it, and the only two choices they feel they have is giving up completely, one last shot to try to get some sort of assistance. not even necessarily assistant, just one last shot to get on the path to getting to be the person that they feel is in there, but they have no idea how to get out of there. And it's like one of the things that I'm really a big proponent on when it comes to the VA is it's not even so much as getting the assistance, man. It's where are these support groups? Where's the infantry, combat infantry veterans VA support group? Right? Where we're grunts, we only feel comfortable opening up around other grunts. So where's that network where I can go to the VA and say, hey, look, I just want to talk to other infantrymen to see how they've made it, what they've done, where are they at? Not me having to go look up a Facebook page, right, or Twitter. Like, where is that group at? Show me another grunt that's gone through, or show me someone that's been in combat arms or an MP or a medic or anyone may have gone through anything similar that I could go through, that I've gone through, that I can feel comfortable talking to. Because in many cases, it's not a trained professional I need. I need someone who's out there sweating like when I was sweating, who's seen what I've seen, who's experienced something similar to what I am, because we can relate to how we both relate that to our actual daily lives and how we always feel no one's ever going to see it the way we see it. So it's like, okay, well, what's worked for you? You wanted to go back to school. You actually went back to school. Man, that's great. I've tried. I failed. What worked for you? How did you prioritize? Because we're different. We're always going to be different. And I think part of the problem when you start talking about these lacking of the VA, it's always those who don't want to listen, who want to shut you out, that you just become – you're just another veteran complaining about the VA.
Right.
Well, it's not a complaint, man. It's pointing out the obvious truth. This is what's lacking. And you know why it's lacking? Because in this big budget of billions of dollars that the VA has, you mean to tell me that no one sat in the room with the foresight of saying, well, what if we try different ways? What if we separate the VA in a way where we have combat veterans and we have veterans? That way we can ease down on the paperwork. That way we can get an understanding, because if combat veterans have went through this and they're coming back with you know, the load of being in combat, especially for – you know, especially for an infantryman, let's just put it that way, going on missions with the gear that we wear, the wear and tear on our body from the training, from any time you spend deployed, that's natural wear and tear on the body, which is different than a soldier who hasn't deployed. So there should be two different avenues of treatment. Because if you look at it from the VA standpoint, it makes more sense, because for more evidence that you have on this side, when it deals with these combat veterans, the more research that you have, because of the more evidence that you have, then the more ways that you're finding ways to treat and address. But lumping us all together, that's part of the problem. The bigger problem that we have, and that big, you and I, Keith, and Bridging the Gap have tried over the past few years to bring out to the major public, is that we still lack, regardless of anything else, regardless of who's the president, who your governor is, veterans lack an actual voice in the decision-making process within the Department of Veterans Affairs. And as long as that continues to persist, then where are we at? It's a slap in the face that I can turn on ESPN and I can see that there's a players' union. I'm not saying that we need a union, but, I mean, if people can sit there for billions of dollars for entertainment, for a sport, to make sure that former players and athletes can be taken care of, not a knock on those who sacrifice and choose the life of being an athlete, but, man, if we can spend that much money and we have that much care and concern over people who at the end of the day do nothing more than entertain us, but we can't put that same energy and effort into those who defend and protect us, sacrifice for us, then it doesn't matter where your background is, what race you are, and where you grew up at, and what your political affiliation is. We're looking at this whole country backwards, where those who sacrifice fall on the bottom of the totem pole. And that extends beyond just those in the military. That goes to first responders. That goes to your law enforcement. We look at it all backwards. But the very first people, the biggest bang, the biggest attention draw, the biggest way to get, if you're looking to get any form of our country on track, is to look at those who fight, defend, and sacrifice their lives for this country to ensure that they are taken care of when they need be. Now, there are going to be malcontents within any system who look to take advantage of those, and that goes back to the VA. If there are better checks and balances and better leadership, then you can identify those, and those who attempt to do that should be punished, and they should be punished to the fullest extent of the law as it pertains to that offense. But for everyone else, it's an offense in itself for the VA to continuously deny, or in the situation of Daniel, your friend, to say that, to lie so that we can reduce our liability, because if it's happening at this VA, surely it's happened at another VA. But if they know that it's happened at this VA and it's happened at another VA, then more people are going to ask questions. And if they ask questions, they're going to want solutions. And if they want solutions, then someone's got to be held responsible. So ultimately, it boils down to a lack of willingness to accept responsibility. And failing to accept responsibility, you're leaving hundreds of thousands of veterans, 20 or 22 per day. I mean, to as morbid as it sounds, those are 20 to 22 veterans a day who were successful at doing something they should never be in a position to have to do. But that means that if there are 22 who are successful a day, you could bet there are 200 who try a day. There is at least one veteran who attempts across this country to commit suicide per hour.
I think that's more than that. I think it's close. I don't know. I just think it's more than that, because you're talking about attempting instead of successfully. You know, I think we have more veterans attempt than we do that actually.
You want to know something I find is a big slap in the face? And Daniel, I'm not gonna bring up your internship exactly where it was, but I don't know how long ago it was. But you tell me if you kind of consider this a slap in the face. You know that here recently, the greatest thing that has been done by a major sports network is to now present our country during the summer with Warrior Games. You know, Warrior Games are veterans, former soldiers, sailors, airmen, injured in either service or injured in combat, to partake in sporting events. And it has become, I saw this last week, the first series of these episodes to air on this major sports network have sold out advertising over $100 million. The total amount of donations going back to veterans' charitable organizations has barely topped $100,000.
My God.
So now our sacrifice has become – It's gone way past pity, where we're put out there during the national anthem of a major sporting event, to now where we are a twisted sense of entertainment. Basically, your wounded gladiators entering back into the pit in another format. So since you couldn't watch them when they did their jobs while they were in uniform, you can watch them now, and you can cheer them on, because that – as it's been billed and advertised, it's the true American spirit is to watch these veterans, these heroes. So, I mean, to me, it's baffling.
And I happen to agree with you.
Until we address and we have those, again, conversations, we're going to find ourselves continuously going down this path.
The cycle changed this path because it's headed in the wrong direction.
No, because things like that, Keith, you know what that inspires? That inspires resentment. It inspires hate. It's not inspiring anyone to, or at least we're seeing very few of it or less of it, where it inspires someone to stand up and say, no, we're not going down in this direction. It inspires disenfranchisement. It inspires, and sadly in many cases, as we're seeing pop up over the news, where you have veterans and you even have active duty soldiers who feel as though, if my country doesn't care that much for me, then you know what? Screw this country. They betrayed me. And if that act of betrayal is that deep, then you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take all this training. I'm going to take all this hatred. I'm going to turn against this country because this country has turned against me. And it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't have to be that way. But, I mean, more do we have to see?
Just mentioned that and made me think of.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Since you mentioned that, it made me think of that. I don't know the whole story. Maybe you've read or heard more than I have. I'm probably so. The active duty soldier that was just I don't know if he was joined ISIS and attacked some people. I believe you mentioned that before you begun, and I was going to wait. Got into it. Do you know what story I'm talking about?
I do. 34-year-old soldier in Hawaii, assigned to the 25th Infantry Division, arrested on Monday on charges of supporting and colluding and passing sensitive information on to ISIS, basically having been not even recruited by ISIS, but self-recruited. That investigation was going for months, and details about it are just starting to come out more this week as to what led him to not only just being a sympathizer, but seeking to become an active member of ISIS while still serving in the United States Army.
That's mind-boggling.
I mean, if you go back, you know, that's an active duty soldier. On June the 1st of this year, there was a Army veteran sentenced to 35 years in prison for attempting to join and become a homegrown or a stateside homegrown terrorist for ISIS. It's situations and stories that we have seen over the years, Keith, since we started this radio show, in fact, where – you know, it's gone from veterans and active duty members who've been deployed. And you know, 80% of the time that we see these stories, it's someone who's been deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan or Iraq and Afghanistan, a single deployment or multiple deployments, where they've sought treatment after coming back or assistance. And, you know, it for one reason or another wasn't provided, where we saw a rash, you know, in 2015, late 2015, early 2016, where we were seeing a rash of violent outbursts of veterans either taking people hostages or committing, you know, violent acts towards other people, towards the public. Those who are innocent had nothing to do with it, or attempted to, you know, these acts of violence towards, you know, the VAs in your area or towards politicians. It's whether or not it's being acknowledged through the media. You know, we see these stories, and it's uncanny how stories like this and situations like this fall under what President Trump tweeted and who he tweeted about. Like, that's the headline. Not, you know, every day you're seeing. And I'm telling you, folks, if you're in Seattle, if you're in Atlanta, if you're in Gainesville, if you're in Austin, Texas, if you're in San Diego, California, no matter where you are in this country, if you go and you look at your local news and I'm telling you, whether you newspaper or you read it on your phone or you read it on an app or you read it on Facebook, increasingly the number of crimes or situations where, you know, there's a headline on the news, it's attached to a veteran more and more. And at the end of it, the same line and dance. Veteran sought assistance with issue from VA, failed to receive any assistance. Now, I'm not going to use that as a cop-out for why people do the things that they do, but it should be alarming if more and more you have people who are trained on a variety of different levels have gone beyond the fact that they're just angry, just upset, just hurt, felt betrayed by their fellow citizens and their government and VA, to go to the extent point now where, you know, if this country, if this country wants to screw me, That's the biggest threat that we have. Not, you know, the kid who's 17 years old that becomes a sympathizer and is brainwashed or, you know, is still young, or the person who's a middle-aged steel worker who becomes disenfranchised and because they got laid off from work, that becomes upset. That's entirely different than someone who's trained and skilled, whose skill and training and service can be used. We're not talking about militias and meetings on Tuesday. We're talking about the very enemy that we are fighting to protect our country against. We are somehow allowing on a more increasing basis. We're basically self-recruiting for terrorist organizations. And we're self-recruiting those who are highly qualified. It's like we're shooting ourselves in the foot, so to speak.
Hey, man, this guy in particular, the one in Hawaii we're talking about, that's just a hard pill for me to swallow. I have to read more about it and to see what, you know, what all he did, and it just – it bothers me. But you're right, though. There's a lot more veterans are becoming headlines of what we're out there to stop.
Yeah, Daniel, when you read this story about this particular soldier, it should soon, like, I'm a grizzled veteran, man. It still sends chills down my spine. I mean, he pledged allegiance to the Islamic State militant group and stated that he wanted to kill a bunch of people. I mean, this is an active duty soldier. You went so far. Are you there, my guy?
With that,
he went so far as to buy drones with the attempt to send them overseas so that the drones could be used to help ISIS fighters evade U.S. tanks. This is an active duty soldier who's willing to go to that rank.
What unit were you in, Amari?
98 to 2004.
Can you say that again for me? I apologize.
Oh, yeah, from 1998 to 2004. This is some candy.
Hey, Amari, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, you keep cutting out, and I think we're going to cut this show short tonight because we got to fix this issue.
Yeah, I apologize about that, man. You were giving good stuff there, but I was having real trouble hearing you, and I would have joined in and commented back, but it was breaking up for me. I'm hoping that people are listening are connect that we are. And actually can hear what you're saying. You added a lot of good things. But you know, I'm glad I got to talk to you at least for a bit, and hopefully we can do it again.
So, of course, anytime, every Wednesday.
So, Amari, we're going to cut it short tonight, and I want to thank the people from Seattle for listening over at KJAQ 96.5 FM in Seattle. And since we've got Daniel on board with Bridges in the Gap, we're going to get him to get all this stuff fixed because I'm out of it. I don't know what else to do, especially whenever you replace everything and put new stuff in.
We'll figure it out. We'll get it straightened out, because I think this could be a good outlet to reach some people.
Oh yeah.
And I think next week, because we're gonna have PTSD Daddy back on. Just gotta make sure everything's working.
Sounds good. I look forward.
See, you just got out. We didn't hear nothing after you said forward.
But I look forward to it.
So we're gonna end it here, and till next week at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. See you later. Call us if you need us.
Good night.
Numbers on the website.